You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The winner of this year's Pulitzer Prize for Fiction is Olive Kitteridge, a novel by Elizabeth Strout. It's a collection of 13 linked stories that revolve around a retired math teacher in a small town on the coast of Maine. It's published by Random House, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Miss Strout back to this show today. Hi.
Hi. It's nice to be here again. Thanks.
Tell us about the character of Olive Kitteridge. Why did you make her rather unsympathetic at first? She's angry, opinionated, rude, also large and physically awkward.
Well, she appeared to me that way in the first story that I wrote, which is not the first story in the collection, but I saw her originally standing by the picnic table at her son's wedding, feeling that it was really time everybody went home. And once I had that image, it just kind of came out, and I realized that she was large, awkward, opinionated, had deep pain that she was going to respond to in impulsive ways. And she just was there. And I kept telling myself as I was writing this book, these tales of Olive, I kept thinking, don't be careful, to myself. I kept, because there was a sense of almost wanting to protect her or to protect the reader or something. And I thought, no, I'm doing something truthful here in some way, and I need to let it go. Let her rip.
She's a seventh grade math teacher. Is she based at all on a teacher you had?
No. I just wanted her to be someone who knew the children, knew the history of everybody in town, the way in a small town a woman who had taught for many years would know a great deal.
And you wrote this as a series of short stories. In fact, it's been described as a novel in stories. Did you conceive of it as a novel, or did you just write this story, say, I'm in love with Olive, I'm going to do another one, and find yourself doing 13 of them?
I didn't think either novel or stories. I just thought the Olive book. I kept thinking I'm going to write a book that belongs to Olive. And I did understand that it would be in story form because that's how she appeared to me. She's such a force that she seemed to need an episodic kind of way of delivery. But I did know that she was going to have her own book.
But how soon before you realized that it also would involve a kind of a linked narrative?
Well, I began to...
Forgive me for interrupting you, but I want to follow up on that question.
Right.
All books, to some degree, are a collection. All novels are a collection of short stories if they have chapters.
That's right. Right.
But there is a difference between feeling that a chapter can be published separately,
right,
and a chapter is just the next step in the telling of the story.
Right. These can stand on their own, which is what a story hopefully can do. And it interested me because I wanted to write not only about Olive, but about the town. She's a part of a town, and I'm fascinated by the way we look at each other in a community, and we think we know somebody, but of course we only know them from that particular slice. And so it was fun to move the camera around and give everybody in town a different version of Olive, and therefore give the reader a different version of Olive.
In fact, even though the book is called Olive Kitteridge, it really is a portrait of this entire town. And it's been compared to Sherwood Anderson's Winesburg, Ohio. I don't know if that was in the back of your head.
Well, it wasn't consciously in the back of my head, but I must tell you, when I first went to college, my very first English class, I was introduced to that book, and I was thrilled by it. I was thrilled by that book. So I'm sure it sits there like all things that one loves.
Wikipedia has a list of all the characters in the book, and it comes to something like 100.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't realize that. That's one of the things that writing stories allows you to do. If you're writing a novel, you would say, do I really want to introduce another character here?
Right. So it was enjoyable, like I said, to sort of move around and let Olive have center stage when I felt like she needed it, which is rather often.
Also, you have a lot of interior monologues here. Does that work better within the short story form?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I can't tell. It's more how it feels when I'm doing it in the particular moment that I'm working in. And so if it feels true to the form and the narrative voice, then I think it will work. I think novels require well, they require whatever they require for that particular novel, but...
My guest is Elizabeth Strout, whose novel, Olive Kitteridge, won the Pulitzer Prize this year. It was also named one of the best books of the year by the Washington Post Book World, USA Today, San Francisco Chronicle, Chicago Tribune. It goes on and on and on. And it has just been made available by Random House in a trade paperback. And like your other novels, it takes place in Maine. Now, when I last spoke to you, you were living in Park Slope, and now you live in Manhattan. But I remember asking you whether this kind of story could be told about a neighborhood like Park Slope, which functions to some degree like
a small town. Certainly does. I think this particular book is very connected to place. I think that Olive Kitteridge is very much a Maine character. I think of her almost as a barnacle clinging to that rock that she calls her home and is afraid of the changes that are sweeping over her. So in certain ways, it's very specific to Maine and to a Maine character, but I think the emotions and the psychological truths, I would hope, are somewhat universal.
Is it easier to write about Maine now that you don't live there?
I think absolutely it is, yes. But I think I've lived in New York 25 years now, so it's like half my life is now in New York. And and this next book does actually start to take place partly in New York, so I'm moving my way down the coast.
Well, I remember talking to the great Chilean writer Jose Donoso, who spent most of his life in living in exile in Madrid, but writing about Santiago, Chile. And he said when he went back, he was horrified because he had romanticized it so much. Nobody can accuse you of romanticizing Maine. Most New Yorkers think of Maine as beautiful and picturesque.
Exactly.
and they visit there in the summer. That's not the Maine you have depicted.
That's
here.
That's not the Maine I'm writing about. That's true.
So what is this Maine like? Do tourists ever show up in towns like the one you've invented here, Crosby?
Yes, they do. And I think the last chapter or the last story makes more mention of the summer people that have moved there and retired for good, and how someone like Olive feels about that, or how some of the original members of the town feel as this changes and more people do discover the beauty of Maine and make it their home, particularly as retired people.
But what we get here largely is the dark side of Maine, the long winters, the struggle to make a modest living, the claustrophobia of a small town where everyone knows everyone else's business.
I think there is that aspect of Maine. There really is. It was very interesting to move to New York and have so many people say to me, oh, I love Maine, and then they would describe, you know, where they go for 2 weeks in the summer. And coming from Maine and coming from many generations of Maine and having grown up there and having grown up at a time working in a little country store when the New York license plates were still orange. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we sort of understood that if an orange license plate came into the parking lot of this tiny little store, they might be asking for a check of $100 to be cashed, and we probably had $20 in the register. So it's an interesting thing, the two different worlds for me.
Most of the stories are about marriage and family, about the ways in which husbands and wives navigate decades of marriage, or how children and parents become estranged. Is Maine a place where people are defined as much by family as by their profession? In New York, you're more likely to think of a person first by where he or she works, or
right,
what they do.
That's a very good question. I think that's probably true, that people in Maine are more concerned with their definition being in where they fall in their family and what their relationship to their family is and how the family works as much as their career or job.
Well, Olive and her husband, Henry, who's a pharmacist, have an interesting marriage. They don't seem to be much alike.
No.
And some people in the town wonder what Henry even sees in Olive. Do you think there are a lot of couples like that?
I do. I mean, it's who knows? I think
different
marriage
in a small
is,
town?
I just don't really know. I think marriage is one of those enduring mysteries, even to the participants. So it would be very difficult for me to say whether, you know, there. I mean, many marriages do have different types of partners and confuse outsiders, I think, as to why they're together and work to some extent. Or not.
So. There's also a fair amount of violence in these stories, suicide, a hunting accident, a hostage situation. But in most of them, the real damage is more emotional than physical.
Right.
And that has always been your main theme, hasn't it?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
In the past, I would ask you about why it took you so long to produce the books, because there were big gaps between them.
That's right.
Amy and Isabel and Abide With Me. But and they also won a fair amount of awards over the years. This one came a lot quicker.
It did. Partly that's because some of the stories I had worked on earlier, but it's also because I did something I hadn't done before, which was to rent a cottage in Provincetown, Massachusetts for the summer. And I knew that this Olive book needed to be done, and I just went there.
Was that what you were calling it, the Olive book?
Yes. Yes. And I went there, and there was no TV, there was no radio, there was only the wonderful biography of Graham Greene and Olive. So every time I stepped back into that cottage after visiting friends or riding around on my bicycle, there was Olive. And it was a very intense experience. And over the course of a number of weeks during that summer, this book emerged, and it was exhausting and exhilarating.
Although in some of the stories, Olive appears only peripherally.
Yes. Yeah. That was a break for the reader and a break for me.
Doesn't it have another title in some editions, On the Coast of Maine?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know.
For you,
I think
it's always been Olive Kitteridge.
Yes. Yes. It came out as Olive Kitteridge, yes.
I was looking up the winners of the Pulitzer Prize in recent years. Only a few women, despite the fact that we have so many wonderful women writing these days.
Right.
That probably makes this honor even more incredible for you.
I'm very pleased to have it, I must say.
Pulitzer Prize, you know, from now on, you realize from now on, no matter what happens, people will say Pulitzer Prize winning novelist Elizabeth Strout.
Right. As Richard Russo said to me, now you've written the first line of your obituary. It's okay.
Are you working
the line
on it?
I can live with.
Are you working on another novel?
I am. I'm finishing up the final revision. It's a larger novel.
And it's a novel.
It's a novel. It's a traditional novel, yes.
So does that take longer because in this case you could just say, well, this is complete as a story and I don't have to worry about how it links to the next chapter?
It's taken me probably about 3 years to write this last book. Of course, it's not yet done because the revision will go on for some time, but it was kind of liberating after having lived with Olive and having had that intense experience of working so precisely on Olive. It was liberating to get down to New York to start to draw some of the landscape of New York, having lived here long enough to finally feel that it had soaked into my cells enough that
I probably lived in New York longer than you lived in Maine.
Well, I'm 53, so not quite.
Well, half and half almost.
Almost half and half.
And the first 3 years don't count anyway.
That's right. I don't know. I think they're probably the most important.
When you say you're going through revisions, are you one of those people who writes a big, messy book and then goes back and tries to make it a little neater, or then makes it messier because all sorts of other things occur to her?
Well, I revise constantly, so I tend to just I enjoy it. You know, I'll write a few pages and then I'll look at it later that night and I'll think, oh, well, actually this, that, and the other thing. So I'm constantly revising, but this type of revision is a little bit of a different process because this is really now coming to the point where I need to make sure it works, so that's a different kind of revision.
Elizabeth Strout is the author of Abide With Me, which was a national bestseller. Also, Amy and Isabel, which won any number of awards. She's been a finalist for the Penn Faulkner Award and the Orange Prize in England. Her short stories have been published in many magazines, including The New Yorker. And her latest book, which is a novel, or 13 stories, depending on how you want to describe it, is Olive Kitteridge, now available in paperback from Random House, winner of the Pulitzer Prize this year. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.